It's time to hear the awful truth. Nature's carbon clock is ticking. We have less than 10 years to make a major turnaround, according to one of America's top scientists. This is Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock. Despite being censored by the Bush administration, there is an important recent interview with James Hansen, the outspoken climate scientist at NASA. This one comes from independent radio journalist Maria Gallardin, who has produced an intriguing series of alternative specials at TUC Radio. TUC stands for Time of Useful Consciousness. It's a flying term, referring to the amount of time a pilot can react to save the plane after the oxygen system fails before passing out. I guess we are in that boat now when it comes to human civilization, the climate, the oceans, and the ecosphere generally. As director of the NASA Institute for Space Studies in New York City, part of the Goddard Space Flight Center, James Hansen has testified about climate change to Congress and the Cabinet, including Vice President Cheney, who probably didn't listen very much. This interview was captured on a San Francisco roof following Hansen's lecture at the December 2006 meeting of the American Geophysical Union. You can get more information from Maria's website at www.tucradio.org. and the full speech from our website at www.ecoshock.org in the climate section of our audio on-demand menu. I'll just give you some critical highlights from the interview. For example,
we did not realize until recently that previous warm periods, the previous so-called interglacial periods, some of which were warmer than the present one, were not very much warmer. At most, 1 degree warmer than the present period. On the other hand, there were times, if we go back 3 million years ago, when the Earth was about 3 degrees warmer, but it was a different planet. There was no sea ice in the Arctic, and sea level was at least 15 meters higher, probably about 25 meters higher. That's 80 feet. I mean, that's a huge climate change. It's something that we really would have a very hard time dealing with because we've set up all of our infrastructure with the coastlines where they are now. And also, a warming that large would have a huge impact on many species. It would drive many high-latitude and high-altitude species to extinction. So we really cannot afford, we really don't want to have a climate change of anything like that magnitude.
Or this.
And if we want to preserve a planet resembling the one that we inherited from our fathers, we're going to need to change the course of our emissions into the atmosphere. And in fact, there are other reasons that it makes sense to do that. And I think we still have time to do that, but unless we begin to make changes this decade, it's going to be very difficult to preserve a planet similar to the one that we inherited.
Maria Gallardin asks,
in your talk just now, you referred to half a degree Celsius that is still in the pipeline, regardless of what we do. I missed the date by which you expect to see that half a degree warming to occur.
Yes, because the ocean has large thermal inertia, it takes it a long time to respond to changes in the heating. And there's still about half a degree Celsius global warming that's in the pipeline just because of this slow response time of the ocean. Some of that warming, more than half of it, should occur within a few decades, but part of it will take more than a century just because the ocean is very deep and it turns over very slowly.
Then there is the deep ocean, which churns very slowly over hundreds of years.
One of the interesting things is that deeper ocean is now getting warmer, which is not surprising because as we warm the surface, the rate of formation of deep water at the high latitudes is decreasing. And that causes the deep ocean to warm because normally it cools by the formation of deep water at high latitudes. So it's a complicated ocean atmosphere system. And the changes that we're seeing, I think, do make sense. But there's a variability from year to year just because the climate system is a nonlinear, chaotic system, just like the weather. It's going to fluctuate warm and cold, and we have to look at the long term in order to really understand what's going on.
Hansen has suggested an alternative or supplemental method of preserving the Arctic from the worst of climate change by controlling methane. For more on this, see my own special, Methane Primer and the Methane Fix, in the EcoShock Features section of ecoshock.org. I discuss the American plan, now expanded to other countries, to control methane as a way to combat climate change. Here, Maria Gallardin asks,
"You said in one of your papers that carbon dioxide is not the only greenhouse gas, and that there are other gases that contribute to global warming as well."
Yes, it's very important to recognize that it's not only carbon dioxide. There are other gases, methane being the second most important, and tropospheric ozone, which is a pollutant. And in addition, there are particles like black soot. And one of the things which I think is very important is that although it looks like the Arctic is now beginning to lose its ice, and there's the prediction that we will lose all the ice in the Arctic by 2040, but in fact, some of the non-CO2 climate forcings are particularly effective in the Arctic. And we could reduce those easier than we can change carbon dioxide. There's going to be some increase in carbon dioxide even if we try to use energy more efficiently. But we could reduce methane, which in turn would reduce tropospheric ozone, and we could also reduce the black soot particles. If we do that, then I think we can retain the sea ice in the Arctic.
How do we go about reducing methane?
Methane has a number of sources. Landfills are one of them. You can design your landfill so that you capture the methane and then use it as natural gas for heating purposes. In addition, there's methane lost in fossil fuel mining, in coal mines. And again, that can be captured and used as a fuel. So we need to pay attention to the various sources of methane and reduce those. And that would go a long way toward saving the Arctic.
Next, Maria moves to the dreaded feedback mechanisms that can create runaway climate change. We find that positive feedback loops can kick in after just 1 degree Celsius of warming. This is a key point. And I love how sirens from the street below intrude for a few seconds, as James Hansen describes a possible rapid unwinding of our climate system. An echo of the future? When Maria refers to the Hadley Center in the UK, you should take some time to find her 6-part radio series on British scientific predictions of climate change. Important stuff. Check out her website, tucradio.org, or search for Gallardin as a producer on the radio exchange site, www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4, all.net. The series is archived there. Maria.
One of the issues that were dealt with last year at the Hadley Center in the UK was a comprehensive description of the feedback mechanisms, and methane was one of them. The recent releases of tundra-bound methane in Siberia that's caused by global warming have already been measured.
You know, as we look at the history of the Earth, we realize more and more how important feedback processes are. That's one of the reasons that I argue that we had better keep additional warming less than about 1 degree, because we know that in the previous interglacial periods that were warmer by up to 1 degree, the feedbacks were there, but they were moderate. On the other hand, if we have warming of 2 or 3 degrees, we're almost certainly going to melt most of the tundra, and that's going to release methane, and we can get very strong positive feedbacks, and we may get a system that's really out of our control.
Do you want to say something about feedback systems in the ocean?
Yeah, the ocean is another important source of feedbacks. Now, the ocean is taking up about 40% of the carbon dioxide that we put into the atmosphere. But if the rate we put it into the atmosphere continues to increase, then one of the feedbacks is that the ocean will become less capable of taking up CO2. And that will provide a positive feedback in effect, and we'll get still more warming.
And what about feedbacks by the ice sheets, the Greenland and the West Antarctic ice sheets?
Yeah, the ice sheets on Greenland and Antarctica contain enough water to raise sea level many tens of meters. Greenland has about 6 or 7 meters of sea level. West Antarctica has another 6 or 7 meters, and East Antarctica has about 60 meters. The West Antarctic ice sheet and Greenland are particularly vulnerable. They're beginning to show signs of increased melt. If we have warming of more than about a degree, I think it's likely that we will lose both West Antarctica and Greenland. The issue is, how long will it take? It had been thought that it may take millennia, but the more and more data that we get, we find that ice sheets in the past have responded quite rapidly. There was Meltwater Pulse 1A about 14,000 years ago. Sea level went up 20 meters in 400 years. Well, that's 1 meter every 20 years. And that was with a forcing much weaker than the human-made forcing. So there is a real danger that we could set in motion disintegration of the Greenland and especially the West Antarctic ice sheet and get changes quite rapidly, even this century.
You are listening to an interview with Dr. James Hansen, one of the few climate scientists who has consistently warned that the impact that humans have on the climate is bringing about changes that are faster than we ever believed and may be irreversible if action is not taken now. We are talking on the rooftop of the conference center in San Francisco during the morning rush hour.
Warming can develop quite rapidly, Hansen says.
Yes, the data that we get from the ice cores in Greenland and Antarctica is remarkable. One of the things that it shows is that climate changes in the past, when we go toward a warmer climate, they happen very rapidly, much more rapidly than as we go toward a colder climate. And the reason is positive feedbacks. If you start to get warmer and begin to have melting, then the ice becomes darker. Wet ice is much darker and absorbs more sunlight and it melts faster. And as the ice sheet begins to get smaller, then the surface lowers and so it's warmer. And so there are multiple positive feedbacks which can accelerate in a warming phase.
You mentioned 10 years a little while ago, not millennia, not 100 years, but 10.
Yes, because if we look at the Earth's history, we realize that, well, 1 degree warming is something that perhaps we can deal with. But more than that, it's beginning to be really a problem. And the problem is we already have additional warming in the pipeline. If we continue with business as usual, then carbon dioxide emissions by 2015 will be 35% larger than they are in year 2000. And it will be impossible to get onto a scenario that keeps warming under 1 degree.
Like Ross Gelbspan, James Hansen also worries about nature's deadline.
Last year, the 10-year time limit by which action is needed was set at the G8 meeting, and it was pretty much ignored. So I've been deducting. We're now at 9.
That's right, because I argue that by 2015, that's when we're 35% higher in our emissions if we continue on business as usual. So we've really got to get the attention of the public now, because it takes time to make the changes in the infrastructure. It's very unfortunate that this global warming story is cast as a gloom and doom story, because in fact it's not a gloom and doom story if we decide to deal with it. There are many benefits in cleaning up the atmosphere and reducing the emissions, in reducing our dependence on fossil fuels, because that's a source of a lot of problems. And in fact, it is possible to have improved technologies that use much less energy and to develop renewable energies. And this will produce high-tech, high-paid jobs. So the only people harmed are the people who are strongly trying to influence the discussion, some of the existing fossil fuel industry. But for the people at large, it would make sense to begin to make the changes that are needed. I tell young people that they had better start to act up, because they are the ones that suffer the most. Many of the changes will take time, but we're setting them in motion now. And we're leaving a situation for our children and grandchildren, which is not of their making, but they're going to suffer because of it. So I think they should start to act up and put some pressure on their elders and on legislatures and begin to get some action.
You have been listening to Dr. James Hansen, director of the NASA Institute for Space Studies, interviewed in San Francisco by Maria Gallardin of TUC Radio in December 2006. Maria has more climate interviews on offer at her site, tucradio.org. She also has a recent program on Ralph Nader and the Green Party in America there. The text of this interview is available from the EcoShock news blog at ecoshock.org/podcast.html. I'm your host, Alex Smith, for Radio EcoShock. Thanks for listening. Sign up for our podcast to get our latest features and check out my weekly radio show on CFRO-FM in Vancouver, Canada, live Fridays at 1 o'clock, on the net at www.coopradio.org, by StarChoice Satellite, Channel 845, or later by download at www.ecoshock.org.